Hi, everyone. It's Jen. Cam and I are really excited about this week's sponsors. We have Iconic Protein Drinks, so make sure you listen to the ads in the middle of the episode so you can get your great discount codes. Enjoy.
How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast. A podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hello, Jan.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
Oh, you know, it's a weird time in the world, shall we say?
Yeah, but you know what? This is a perfect time for escapism, so let's pretend for this hour or three or however long this is going to be, that the world is normal and everything is just dandy peachy keen. Everybody's got their hands washed. And until the end of the apocalypse, let's just pretend that it's not happening. Let's stick our heads in the sand for this hour. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Except I'm still locked in my closet with all these clothes around me. I did flip my desk around, so I used to look at my shirts. Now I'm looking at my coats. So,
oh, good.
I mean, you know, it's a change of scenery, if you will.
It is. It's a little. I'm still looking at all my husband's Hot Wheels. So,
well,
you know.
It's okay. I like it. So, escapism. We got one for you today. I got a nice little case for you.
No good.
Two things. So, I was researching about how women weren't really serial killers, right? And usually...
There's not a lot of serial killers, right?
And usually, how do they... Like, what happens? What do they do? How do they kill people? Meaning, how do they...
Oh, they normally poison.
Okay, yes. Right? Yes. I'm sorry. That was a bad lead-in. But yes. And so, anyway, I stumbled upon this, and I was like, what? This is a crazy story. And it's not just one female killer. It's two.
Oh, together. Nice.
So, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's January 18th, 1987 at the Alpine Manor Nursing Home in Walker, Michigan, when a nurse was making her rounds and she went into the room of an Alzheimer patient by the name of Marguerite Chambers. Now, the older woman was unresponsive and not breathing. A team rushed in to revive her, and it was too late. It seems that Marguerite died sometime during the night. Now, you know, death is not uncommon in a nursing home, but... I mean, I guess relatively speaking, Marguerite was still pretty healthy. She did have Alzheimer's, but death was not exactly what was expected for her in the near future. In fact, her family had just been in that day to see her, and they had brought her a big bouquet of red balloons. So it was kind of a shock. Her passing was not expected. She wasn't exactly in the later stages of Alzheimer's, but, you know, sometimes things happen. Especially when you get older in a hospital and you're with all these people, as we know today, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? So it's standard practice that the staff would let the family know and come in and retrieve her belongings. So it was then that one of the family members, I believe it was a daughter, noticed that one of the balloons that they had given her was missing. So then it was like, did somebody actually take one of Marguerite's balloons? It just kind of weird, right? Well, the answer would come back, but not before others would also die mysteriously. Comstock Park, Michigan, is a suburb located right outside of Grand Rapids, with a population right around 10,000. You know, it makes it a great place to plant some roots, raise a family. So Catherine May Wood called it home, but her upbringing was not exactly ideal. Her father was an alcoholic, and he wasn't home very much of the time. Catherine's mother was not exactly a very loving mother to Catherine or Kathy, often showering her love and attention to the family pet instead of her daughter, Kathy. She had a very domineering personality, and she was extremely conservative in her views, causing a little bit of strife between the mother and daughter. This one ended up, you know, causing them to fight, as Kathy would feel rejected and unloved. Kathy struggled with her self-esteem. She didn't really fit in. She was a little bit of a bigger girl, and she was always very self-conscious about her weight. Because of this, and because of, you know, I guess how she perceived herself, her self-esteem, she felt like an outsider. We all know how hard that is as a teenager. I mean, could anything be worse than being a teenager? I'm going to say no.
No, you couldn't pay me to go back and be a teenager. No, never in a million years.
No way. It's
horrible. And then relive it through my kids right now? No, it's hard enough doing it as a child, but then to see your kids suffering.
Middle school is as bad as prison, I swear to God. If they can make it out of middle school, they got it. Back to the story.
Okay.
All this began to change a little bit when Kathy began seeing a boy named David. Now, the boy treated her with the respect and love that she so craved. The two fell in deep like, and they dated for about 6 months. Now, all this would come to a crashing halt, courtesy of Kathy's mom. One afternoon, Kathy's mom went over to David's house to pick her up, you know, pick up her daughter. That's not strange in itself. Mm-hmm. So David's mother answered the door, and Kathy and David were actually on the couch, like right inside the living room. She could see him. And Kathy's mom was excited to meet this young man that had stolen Kathy's heart, I guess you could say. And at the door, she said, "Hi, I'm Kathy's mom, and I'm here to get my daughter, but I'm very excited to meet David." The strange look of shock was immediate. David's mom answered, "There is no David, only Debbie."
What?
Kathy had been keeping a secret from her mom, and that her first love was a girl, and that the secret is one that very conservative mother could not handle. Her mom told Kathy if she ever saw Debbie again, she would commit her to a mental institution because it was a sin against the world. God, I don't know, the Bible, I don't know how you say that.
Right.
So 17-year-old Kathy left Debbie behind, following her mom's wishes, and she would soon meet up with a factory worker whose name was Ken. Now, Ken was attracted to Kathy's personality. She was very smart, and Kathy was attracted to Ken because he liked her. She liked the love, she liked the attention, and I mean, as so often, and we see it, right? The kids with their low self-esteem and things like that, the relationship moved really quickly. And it wasn't too long before Catherine found out she was pregnant. So Ken did what I guess is considered the right thing, and he asked Kathy to marry him. And she accepted, and a little girl was born. Now, it's not too long into the marriage that Kathy realized she married her father, as Ken was quite the drinker. He was kind of abusive towards her. A lot more in common with her dad than she had initially thought.
Just to be clear, she didn't actually marry her father. She married somebody that was a lot like her father, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Gotcha.
So Kathy soon fell into a depression, and desperate to shake it off, she decided she needed to get a part-time job. You know, she's young. She's at home. I mean, these guys are pretty young, and they have a baby girl. So it's, you know, you're depressed. You're upset about your weight. You're upset about your life, all that stuff. So she decides she's going to get a part-time job. Go her, right? That's good.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She wanted to not feel so trapped. She wanted to be more, I guess, confident in herself and what she could do. In 1985, she began a job as a nurse's assistant at the Alpine Manor Nursing Home. Now, Kathy really liked this job, and, you know, she really did like helping the elderly folks. She also really liked all her coworkers. This was different for her. She was getting out. She was being accepted. And like we just said, middle school, high school, it's a little rough. You get older and then you can look back and you're just a totally different person, right?
Right.
So several of her coworkers were actually lesbians. And in fact, a lot of them were in relationships with each other. Now, Kathy, who was punished by her mother earlier for her relationship with Debbie, really enjoyed getting to know the side of herself, getting to know people that were like her. She really kind of felt like she was fitting in. She started hanging out with them after work, getting drinks. She had found her people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Her husband, on the other hand, was not so happy. And he wasn't happy with just the social life and that Kathy was not at home all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even though Kathy liked all her coworkers, there was one in which she immediately hit it off. That would be a 23-year-old Texas girl named Gwendolyn Graham. Born in 1963, Gwen Graham was a California native who grew up in Tyler, Texas. She was a decent student, but her teachers would often say that she seemed to be sad, like she was carrying a burden, didn't smile a whole lot, you know, around school. Later on, Gwen would claim that she was carrying around a bunch of sadness because her father was, in fact, molesting her.
Oh.
Now, the father would deny this, and it never went to court. It never went to court, so it's no one could really say if it really was true or not. So moving to Michigan in 1986, Gwen found work as a nurse's aide at the Alpine Manor Nursing Home in Walker, which is a Grand Rapids suburb. Now, Gwen's immediate supervisor at the Alpine Manor was none other than 24-year-old Kathy Wood. So Gwen and Kathy had a lot in common. In fact, Kathy was raised by an abusive father as well, who she claimed emotionally and physically abused her. Now, Gwen, as I had stated earlier, had said that her father had sexually molested her. In fact, for punishment with Kathy, her father, and this is terrible, would hold her head in the toilet and flush it.
Her dad did that to her?
Yes. Now, he also had a weird sense of what was appropriate in regards to what children should see and do. And, you know, like, I guess when we were younger, this was a different time, Jen. There was a lot that we probably saw, but there was a lot we didn't see because we didn't have the internet, right?
Right.
But her dad would actually, she grew up on a farm. Okay, that's fine. And we know that little farm boys and girls, they see a lot different than we do. You know where I'm going with this.
Right.
Death is commonplace, whether it's slaughtering for food or putting a sick animal down, right? But her father would actually force her to watch him slaughter these animals, and she'd cry and try to get away, and he forbid it. He would like literally tie her down, and she was little. I'm talking like 5, 6, 7.
No,
little.
That's horrible. All of it's horrible.
So about this time when Kathy was working at the nursing home, her and her husband were having some issues, Ken, and they separated. So Kathy, I guess with stress, and it's normal, you know, us girls, right? Mm-hmm. She starts to stress eat. And she'd gain a lot of weight. And I mean a lot. She ended up at around 450 pounds.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Her self-esteem took a hit, and she was very lonely. She was desperate. She wanted a new life. She wanted to make friends. And I get that. I totally get that. So when she ended up meeting Gwen, they kind of hit it off, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So Gwen was also very troubled, much like Kathy, but in a different way. As Gwen entered her teen years, she began cutting herself and burning herself. Her arms and legs were covered in scars. As soon as Gwen turned 18, she was out of there. She was out of the house. Gwen began dating a woman, and the two fell in love. When Gwen's girlfriend was offered a job in Grand Rapids, Gwen went with her and landed a job as a nurse's assistant at the Alpine Manor Nursing Home. Now, this is where her and Kathy met. The two of them became fast friends. They started bonding not only over the work and all that stuff, but also their upbringings. They were friends for a long time before. And when I say a long time, I mean, you know, weeks and months, whatever. So they were friends for a long time before anything happened. But soon those late night bonding sessions turned into more. Kathy had been married, right? And Gwen had a girlfriend. But you know, Jen, you can't stop love. Can't stop love. Love is love, right?
Mm-hmm.
After months of sneaking around, Kathy asked Ken, I'm out. We're done. I met somebody. We're totally finished. And I'm so crazy about this person. And this is where I get a kind of falter. I'm sorry. And maybe I shouldn't say this. But you can have full custody of our daughter.
What?
Yep.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Kathy.
Little got, selfish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She wanted away. She gave him full custody. Gwen, in fact, left her girlfriend and the two of them would get an apartment together. So Kathy loved that Gwen was, shall we say, a little adventuresome in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And in the boudoir, they began experimenting with some things. And this really blew Kathy's mind.
So Kathy they, was, they got their freak on together, correct?
They did. Mm-hmm. They started experimenting with BDSM.
She's a super freak. Super freak. She's super freaking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they started experimenting with BDSM, but they mm-hmm. also started experimenting with sexual asphyxia to achieve that perfect, better orgasm, I guess, is what you could say, among some other stuff. But one of the things that they would do is literally, I guess, choke each other till one would pass out or have an orgasm, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they really were in love. Kathy was beside herself. She's losing weight. She's feeling great. And Gwen had always, you know, been pretty confident in herself, and Kathy needed that. So this was a big deal. In 1987, Alpine Manor's residents started to be dying a little bit faster than they should, right? Now, this isn't strange in the sense that a lot of residents in nursing homes are elderly and or sick. But what they couldn't figure out is why these seemingly healthy people were fine one day and dead the next. Now, these events would lead to the undoing of this couple in love. On October 8th, 1988, a man walked into the police station, and he said he wanted to report a crime, or rather a series of crimes, and that the story he would tell them sounded like a teen horror movie plot. He was shaking and fidgety, and he's sweating. He's hardly able to get out the words. He tells officers his wife, or ex-wife, had told him something, a secret, and he had not told anyone for a bit. For a long bit, like over a year, like 14 months, okay? And this man was Ken Woods, and that was Kathy's ex-husband. So Ken tells police that he was devastated when Kathy left him approximately 14 months earlier. But after she was gone for about 10 months, he said one night the doorbell rang, and it was late at night. So he answered the door, and he was shocked to see Kathy there, and she was hysterical. She's in tears, she's crying. So of course he invites her in, and Kathy would tell Ken that she and Gwen had the biggest fight of their life, the biggest fight of their relationship. And it was it. That was over. It was done. Kathy was moving out. And, you know, she asked Ken if she could just stay the night at the house because she had nowhere else to go.
Mm-hmm.
So Ken, of course, could tell that Kathy was totally upset, but he would say that he noticed that she was really bothered by something else. It was more than just that fight. It was almost like she was wanting to fess up to something. So he kept pushing her. He kept trying to get her to confide in him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kathy would tell Ken a story that was really, truly unbelievable. Kathy tells Ken that she and Gwen killed 5 patients at Alpine Manor between January 1987 through April 1987. I'm sure a lot of you listening right now are trying to do the same thing Jen and I are trying to do. We're trying to figure out how to make a schedule and keep a schedule during spring break. And part of that requires us to make sure our families are getting fed with healthy and hearty options. That's where our new favorite protein drink comes in. Iconic Protein Drinks have given me peace of mind by making sure my teens are getting all the protein they need. One of my teens wakes up, has one for breakfast, while my other one will have one during the afternoon for a snack. I'm really surprised how much my kids like the taste of Iconic Protein Drinks. I like that the drinks are made with grass-fed milk protein, which keeps them full longer. They love the chocolate truffle drink because, honestly, it tastes just like chocolate milk. I really like that Iconic Protein Drinks are low sugar, low calorie, and low carbohydrates. I am really trying to be healthy, and to me, the vanilla bean is a special treat that I have in the afternoon. Iconic Protein Drinks come in a variety of flavors, such as turmeric ginger, cacao and greens, which actually deserves a full serving of organic vegetables in just one tasty drink. You know there's a reason that Iconic Protein Drinks are rated number 1 on Amazon for best tasting protein drinks. We are both so happy that Iconic Protein Drinks have partnered with us for this episode, and they are giving our listeners 25% off their first order. If you're looking to get more protein without all the sugar and calories while having a tasty treat, you have to try Iconic Protein Drinks. Visit Iconic at drinkiconic.com or on Amazon. Use code RTRUECRIME and you will get 25% off your first order. Don't miss out. Go to drinkiconic.com, that's all lowercase, or Amazon, and plug in the code Our True Crime for your first order and get 25% off. That's Our True Crime, all lowercase. So, Jen, most people that just heard this from an ex-lover would try to keep their composure. I mean, this is what I'm thinking, right? Because I'm like, was reading this and stuff, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Your ex-lover shows up at your door, and they tell you this. Well, I'd be scared. I'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, yeah, oh, I hear you. Okay, and now you need to get out, and then as soon as they get out, you're going to lock the door and call 911, right? Like, right. She just confessed to you that she killed 5 people. What's one more, right? What's right. one more? No, he doesn't. Does he go straight to the police? No. Ken waited. He waited a while, like 14 months before he went to the police with this information. Now, he would say that he just wasn't sure if it was true or not. So he kind of wrestled with it. He sat with it. And in fact, that next day after Kathy had come to him, Kathy and Gwen, of course, would make up and Kathy would move back in with her. So Ken just kind of sat on this information. He wasn't really quite sure what to do with it. I guess he was kind of hoping he might learn more. Maybe thinking that Kathy lied or was just upset and was trying to be mean to Gwen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Ken pried Kathy for some more information about this. And it would seem that these victims were not just chosen at random. In fact, it was a game to them, Kathy would tell him. Mm-hmm. It was a murder game. You see, Jen, they were choosing victims whose initials would spell out the word murder.
Oh, okay. I know what we're talking about here.
This is crazy. This is crazy.
It is crazy, but you know what? These people were depicted in American Horror Story, one of the episodes of American Horror Story.
Why,
the very
yes, they
first
were.
Season.
I'm glad you brought that up. Mm-hmm. Yep, they sure were. You are correct.
See how good I am?
I didn't even know that until I finished all this. But anyway.
Oh, yeah?
Police were shocked, to say the least, and they weren't sure if Ken was making all this up or what. So they contact Alpine Manor to inquire about people who had passed away during that 4-month span. Now, the Alpine administration gave authorities a list of people that had died during that time, but assured them they had all died of natural causes. They also provided personnel files of Kathy and Gwen to the police. In the files, they learned that Gwen had resigned in June of the previous year and Kathy had quit in October. So neither of them worked at the manor when police finally got in there, right? Now, while this could seem a little bit suspicious, they needed more than that. As they're combing through the records, something begins to stick out. The first death was Marguerite Chambers, and she had passed away in January. Next up, Wanda Urbanski, Ruth Van Dyke. Now, you see where we're going. M-U-R. So it's first name, last name, first name. So now Ken's story doesn't seem that strange after all. The police move in quick, and they go to talk to the women. First up is Kathy, and she tells police, it was just a joke.
Oh, that, yeah.
You know, she didn't think Ken would actually believe that. And Ken was just upset that she left him for another woman. He was so upset that he took 14 months to tell police about this. Uh-huh. Mm, right?
I'm sure.
Of course, police don't really buy this. And they decide that two can play the lying game. So they bluff and they tell Kathy that, hey, guess what? We already have evidence. And it doesn't look good for you, Kathy. So just like that, Kathy sings like a canary, and she admits that what she told Ken was actually true. But, you know, it was all Gwen. It's all Gwen, Jen. Of course.
Of course it was.
Of course it is. In fact, Kathy did not take part in any of the murders, but only acted as Gwen had forced her to do. Kathy says it all began one afternoon when she walked into Marguerite Chambers' room, and Gwen was standing over Marguerite, smothering her with a towel over her nose and mouth. And Kathy was freaked out, but Gwen assured her that, you know, Marguerite was suffering and that she was simply putting her out of her misery. Now, that wasn't even close to the truth. When the woman left the now deceased Marguerite's room, Gwen stole the balloon, one of those balloons, remember we talked about earlier, from her room. Now, those were the balloons that her family had brought her that very morning. So obviously, Marguerite, she may have been ill, but she was not, you don't bring them a bouquet of balloons. Do you
right.
see what I'm saying? If you're you're at the end there, you're not bringing them a bouquet of balloons. So, Jen, I can't make this up. These people are crazy. I swear to God. part of me wishes that we never did a podcast because I learned the, like, I know people are not right in the head sometimes, but sometimes I'm just like, what? So, Jen, do you want to guess?
See how crazy everybody is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So you want to guess what Gwen and Kathy did with that balloon and that string? Do you want to just take a guess as to what they did with that?
I'm going to say they used it as some form of autoerotica type thing.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. When the couple got home, Gwen tied Kathy to the bed using that string from the balloon that she had stolen. And the two women proceeded to, you know, bow chicka wow wow. I'm not going to go into that. But Kathy said it was right after that that Gwen told her that they were just getting started. And in fact, the next person they would, quote, put out of their misery would be one in which they both participated in. Because since, you know, they're in love, Jen, and this would prove it, the love that they had for each other would be proven if they could both, you know, kill somebody together.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy claimed that she loved Gwen so much that if she didn't agree to this, that the deal, she would lose Gwen forever. And she loved Gwen. She could not, that's not going to happen, right? Over the next several months, the couple would kill a total of 5 people, always making sure it looked as if they died peacefully in their sleep instead of the reality of being brutally smothered to death. Now, Gwen would place a washcloth or towel over their mouth while Kathy, now this is what Kathy said, Kathy was the lookout, making sure that they would not be caught or disturbed. Now, Gwen, not unlike most of the serial killers we're familiar with, would take something from the patient as a trophy or a reward, whatever. With Marguerite, it was the balloon, right? The balloon and the string. With Edith, it was a bracelet. With Mae Mason, it was like a bracelet charm. There was always something that they took, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is important.
Trophy.
In a minute.
Yeah.
Gwen had a shelf in which she would display these trinkets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it was said that as many as 3 of her coworkers, nurses, associates, assistants, whatever you want to call them, saw that shelf, and Gwen would openly brag to them about what it was. Well, the workers blew it off because they just thought Gwen and Kathy were joking around, that this was actually Gwen's trophy shelf. How sad is that?
That's
shocking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kathy would later tell police that with each murder, Gwen would get more and more turned on, almost like it was a drug for her. As the killings got more bold, so did their actions. The two actually began sneaking off to a remote area right inside the nursing home to have hot and heavy sex right after killing these poor older people.
I don't get that as a turn on, but that's...
Yeah. Hello, because that's not right. Anyway, part of the job as the nurse's position as they had would be to prepare the body for burial after they died. Well, sometimes that they would get so turned on by this, the two of them, they would literally, like, have sex right there. What? There's no words. I got you. There's no words. So it was only about 2 weeks after their last murder that the killing would come to a stop. And it was what Kathy was afraid of all along. It wasn't about getting caught or any of that stuff. But Gwen found another woman to love. Gwen would meet 22-year-old Heather Barriger, who started working at Alpine as a nurse's aide, and the spark was immediate. Heather was really cute. She was blonde. She was young. She was just fiery. She was, you know, she was new. Let's put it that way. So Gwen was putting all her attention on Heather, and Kathy knew it. Kathy knew that the relationship with Gwen was over, and she was not exactly happy about it, but she was happy in the sense, or she would so claim later, that the killing would stop because of this. So one afternoon, Kathy stumbles upon them, like, kissing and kind of making out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kathy flips out, and she's just like, are you kidding me? So, you know, one of the things that the two of them had was sort of a love pact, right? They killed people together. So it's like, you can't leave me because we have the secret. And it's not just a secret of, like, a Christmas present, right, that we got somebody.
Right.
This is a huge, I'm going to take you down or you can take me down kind of secret, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Kathy flips out over Gwen, and she was just like, this is not happening. So at this time, back into the picture. Ken has went to the police, right? And the police are, they kind of see an opportunity that Kathy's weak or whatever. So authorities go to Kathy and they ask her to take a lie detector test. And shockingly, she agrees. Now, the test would come back to prove inconclusive. But one thing was for sure, she knew way more than she was saying. So she wasn't exactly lying, but she wasn't exactly telling the truth, right?
Right.
So I think part of this was that Kathy is so heartbroken that I think probably she knew that what she was doing was wrong, right? But she was also kind of getting back at her a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So with Kathy admitting to being part of the crimes that took place, or, you know, being a little vague with stuff, police needed to go talk to Gwen. And they had some trouble finding her. She had run off, apparently, with her new girlfriend, Heather. And they went back and they ended up finding her in Tyler, Texas. And that's her hometown. So Gwen and Heather had moved back there and police did catch up with them. Now, police find Gwen is now currently working at a hospital and it's in the children's ward with babies and little kids.
That's the...
You see where this is going. So Gwen, of course, denies everything and says that Kathy made all this up because she was a scorned lover who thought their relationship was way more than it ever was. Now, Gwen says it was really mostly physical. It wasn't serious, Jen. They lived together. Like, people would say, no, that was not true. Okay? Because they did live together. If you're not serious, you're not going to live together. Am I wrong? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Right?
You'd think. Right.
So Gwen went on to say that Kathy was wildly jealous. She was out of control. And that finally Gwen had enough. And she's the one that ended the relationship. Well, Kathy was so distraught about this. And then that one day when Kathy walked in and caught Gwen and Heather together, she flipped out. She had a giant blowout. And that was it for Gwen. The two got into a huge fight. And Kathy kicked Gwen out of the house. Now, Gwen tells police that Kathy was making all this up because, you know, she loved her and had never gotten over her. So now police, this is like a tennis match, right? So now they gotta go back. Police go and they ask Gwen to take a polygraph exam. And again, surprisingly, she says yes. And just like Kathy's, Gwen's test was inconclusive. Now, again, this doesn't mean you're telling the truth. It doesn't mean you're lying, but it's just, it can't be definite, right? So with nothing to hold her on, the police have to let Gwen go. So police get together and, you know, they kind of brainstorm and they know that they need to try something new. So they thought, you know what? We could kind of sense that Kathy was holding out on us and we need to get her to break. We need to come at her with something that will make her confess. So police ask her again to consent to yet another polygraph. But this time they're not messing around. They bring in a pro. In fact, he's been conducting high profile polygraphs for over a decade. He's kind of the, what would you say, like the, can't even think of the word, but like the one that can see through everything and like he can tell if they're lying or not, right?
Like the mom?
Yes, like
yeah. The mom. Mm-hmm. Moms always know when you're lying. It doesn't matter how good you are. Moms know.
So after more than 3 hours, she broke down and confessed to not only killing all those people, but that she wasn't the innocent bystander as she had been portraying before. Kathy tells police that the two women came up with this plan one night after lovemaking in bed. They wanted this to be sort of a love pact that would bond them together forever. In fact, they came up with the saying, I will love you forever. And then they would change it when one person died. So it would be, I love you forever and a day. I love you forever in 2 days. I love you forever in 3 days. And so that was their code with another person passing away. It was a secret nod between
them. Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Sick stuff, man. So, you know, saying that in front of people, I'm guessing, is the secret turn on for that. You know what I mean? Like you would say that in front of people. So it's your nod to each other. So Margaret Chambers was only 60 years old. Now, she had Alzheimer's. She was their first victim. She was exhumed on November 30th, 1988. In all, police would identify a possible 40 people that died during that four-month killing period.
40 people in 4 months?
But you got to remember, this is everybody that died during that period. So not necessarily
this is a
nursing home, right?
But still high numbers, I would think, for a nursing home.
It did. It did go up a little bit there. So after investigating, the officers indicated that a possible 8 victims that they really could kind of tie up to those two, their work shift, when they work together, all that stuff. All of that would be trimmed down to the 5 that would end up coming into the court trial. And that would be 89-year-old Edith Cole, 95-year-old Myrtle Luce, 79-year-old Mae Mason, and 74-year-old Belle Berger and Marguerite Chambers. So Kathy Wood was arrested for the murders of Marguerite Chambers and Edith Cole. Police head to Tyler, Texas, to arrest Gwen. And they're surprised to be told that Gwen and Heather had moved out and they left no forwarding address. Now, this kind of cracked me up, I gotta be honest. So it seems the couple were trying to make a run for it, right? They're out there, they're running away. So lucky for us, they didn't make it far. In fact, they only made it to a stoplight.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. A police unit was out. They had been notified of the, you know, be on the lookout, the bolo, whatever. They pull up next and they're right there. They're right there.
That'd be
right
our luck. I mean, seriously, you know that. That's
right?
Our luck.
I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So they move in and they arrest Gwen. And she's not going quietly, mind you. Mm. She's screaming. She's yelling. She's thrashing about. And police, you're wrong. You got it wrong. Now, she's still young, by the way. I mean, she's like still in her early mid-20s. So with not much in terms of evidence, and really this is a she said kind of case, right? Like there is no hard evidence. These people, they were elderly. They were sick. They had seemingly been smothered. So there wasn't a lot to go on. And they'd all been buried thinking that they had died of natural causes. Authorities need Kathy's testimony to get Gwen. All right. So you know that you're going to always push somebody to go against the other, right? So they go to Kathy and they try to get her to take a plea agreement. And of course she does. In exchange for Kathy testifying against Gwen, Kathy would plead guilty to 1 count of conspiracy and 1 count of second degree murder. And that would be in the case of Marguerite Chambers. Now, Kathy was sentenced to 20 years in prison on each of those counts. Now, talk about, I don't know, this is big bugging me lately because I've just been like looking at stuff about people that, you know, you and I go commit a murder and that whichever one's the first one to get to authorities to rat out the other one, that's the best deal. Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So these two killed all these people together. Now, Kathy's always saying that she was a lookout. Well, we're going to find out how that worked out, right? In a minute.
They're all lookouts. You know that.
But she only got 20 years. 20 years, okay? So now it's Gwen's turn. And on September 9th, 1989, Gwen would stand trial for all 5 of the patients that died under her care at the Alpine Manor Nursing Home. Gwen pled not guilty because she claimed no evidence had been found, which was true, honestly, and that the patients had died from natural causes. She would claim that Kathy, or her attorneys, I guess, would claim Kathy was a jealous ex-girlfriend who is still angry and trying to get back at her for leaving her for that cute little young Heather, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the prosecutors didn't quite see it that way. Using Kathy's testimony, they portrayed Gwen as a ruthless person who used sex and Kathy's vulnerabilities against her. Kathy claimed that Gwen used her endless love to get her to comply and commit these heinous acts. Now the tears were flowing and the crowd was hushed in the courtroom. People, seriously.
Yeah.
Kathy would also testify that Gwen had attempted but failed, this was a shocker to me, to suffocate an additional 5 people. Those 5 people would end up surviving, right?
Wow.
Now, these are people in the nursing home, so they can't say, this person did this to me. I mean, how awful is that?
Right.
And I kind of envisioned the, you know, like the heart rate going, like it's going up, but the person can't say anything because she entered the room and it goes up and everybody's like, oh my gosh, is she okay? That's the whole vision I had of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So Kathy would add that she needed to testify against Gwen when she found out, and this is heartbreaking, that Gwen was working with young children and babies in that hospital in Texas. And this was Kathy's quote on the stand. When she was killing people at Alpine and I didn't do anything, Wood told them that that was bad enough. But when she would call me and say that she wanted to smash a baby, I had to stop her somehow. I knew that she was working in a hospital there. She said she wanted to take out one of the babies and smash it up against a window.
Ugh.
I had to do something. I didn't care about myself anymore. While all of this was intriguing, of course, as Kathy was the star witness in the trial, it was not the cherry on top, if you will. Mm-hmm. That would come from Gwen's own girlfriend, Heather. Now, Heather had initially refused to cooperate or even talk to authorities, but finally she knew she had to do the right thing, and that was to tell on Gwen. She told the jury that one day Gwen broke down in tears and said that she did, in fact, murder those five people. It was all the jury needed to hear. And on November 3rd, 1989, Gwen Graham was found guilty of 5 counts of murder and 1 count of conspiracy to commit murder. And the court gave her 5 life sentences. She resides in the Huron Valley Complex, which is for female offenders.
Right. She's still alive, though, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
Now, Kathy Wood would become eligible for the first time in 2005 for parole. And at the age of 43, she has been denied parole each time.
Kathy Woods was actually released from prison January 2020, so just a little bit ago.
So families of the victims who died by the hands of these demented demons sued the owners of the Alpine Manor nursing home for hiring dangerous and unbalanced employees. Gee, you think? Alpine Manor would actually go out of business, but the building is still operating today, and it is a nursing home. And I do have the name of it, but I'm not going to say that because I just don't think that's right.
Good.
So that is this case. Now, this, okay, so you and I have always talked about, is evil created, or does it?
Are you born with it, or is it Maybelline? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes. So my next question is, because I've thought about this, because we've all had those friends that kind of bring out the best and the worst in us. So you and I have had some adventures, shall we say? I mean, nothing like this, but like, you know, when you're with somebody and they egg you on.
You mean keep drinking, it'll get better? That kind of stuff?
Keep drinking, it'll get better. Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. The kind of things where like Kathy would never do this on her own. Gwen might. Maybe Gwen had those ideals, but then she met Kathy and was like, I can get her to help me do this. I've always wanted to do this. Oh, and yeah. I found somebody that can help. You know what I'm saying?
Kathy has the low self-esteem and she wants to be loved and wants to be a part of something. Of course, it would be easy to manipulate that person into doing something for you.
But then wouldn't you, like, you're killing somebody and it's not just one time. It's five, maybe 10, because like they said the 5. Wouldn't part of you be like, this can't happen. This is
maybe,
not okay.
You think maybe they justified it, but she's 95 years old. She doesn't have much left. I always just want to try.
From what I saw, that was the first one with Marguerite. Mm-hmm. But Marguerite was, I think, she was nonverbal, but she was far from the end of her life. And she was pretty young. I think she was 60. I forgot what I said. But she was younger, right? Mm-hmm. Her family brought her balloons. They came to see her that day, for crying's sake. So she was, you know.
Almost makes you wonder if there's something that Marguerite did that one of them took as an insult.
Oh, I think that, and that was the other thing. Like the other nurses, the family members said that they really liked them. They were warm. They were nice. I don't know. I think they're just two sick people. And it was kind of like the daring thing. Like, I'm going to do this. And then you're going to do this. And then, but the whole getting off on it and all that.
Yeah. Ugh. I mean, I'm normally for to each their own and live. Yes, and
that's different, though. That's different. You want to tie yourself up with a balloon string? You go right ahead. I'd have no problem with that balloon string. Better be from the Ben Franklin store you bought, not the one that you stole from the person you just killed.
That's why, right? I said I normally am all yes to each their own. But this is disgusting. It rotten.
So yeah, I didn't know that this was an American Horror Story until at the very end.
You do.
All right, that's all I got for you.
Very good. Well,
I was a doozer.
I've been watching a very interesting thing on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, it's called 100 Humans, and it's kind of funny. It's human social experimentation. Kind of interesting. So give it a test out. Like the first episode, they did attractiveness. Like, will people that are attractive get less time in prison than people that aren't attractive? Yeah, but it
people,
is. And
people
this
like
is
pretty people.
And and they do things like, if you hold your urine, will you be able to concentrate more than if you don't have to go to the bathroom?
Absolutely not.
No, it's just, I mean, it's, they have all these hypotheses and then they try to prove, or it's just fun. It's nothing scientific too much. But okay. It's a good get your mind off stuff. Today, I cleaned out my makeup and everything. And I'm telling you, I will say this right off the bat. Elemis, absolutely love it. They did give us a sample of it. We have tried it, or I've tried it. I really like it. I have psoriasis, and it really helps my dry skin. Go do it. But then I also found out I honestly have about a billion little testers with all the FabFitFun things that I'm in, the mm-hmm, Ipsy bags, mm-hmm. the Birchbox, mm-hmm. all that. I have so many wrinkle-free, get rid of your wrinkle stuff that if I come out of this with wrinkles, I'm going to be pissed. Or I should say, if I come out of it with more wrinkles, I'm going to be pissed because I should have baby butt skin by the time this is all over.
You do, Jen. You do. I don't care what anybody says.
But I'm telling you that Elemis is worth getting. It's expensive. I'm not going to lie to you. The Elemis thing is expensive.
You get that $10 marine collagen cream.
You go to elemis.com/us/ourtwocrime. And that'll take you directly to where you order it, and it'll give you the $10, and that includes shipping. I think there is some tax, so I think it ended up being like $10.42 or something, and you'll get a little thing back. But I'm telling you, I love it. It really is moisturizing. So
which one did you save for me?
You got the same one with the SPF, though. I'm giving you the one with the SPF. The other one that I'm giving you is the second most.
You got wrinkles. Wrinkles! I said because they have wrinkles! Okay, go ahead.
No, but I'm going to give you the little under eye face mask.
Because you got wrinkles.
Those are like $80.
Okay, yeah.
So you can take that. And I'm going to take the face wash stuff because I need very sensitive face wash to wash my face because of my damn psoriasis.
I'll say that I'll be over there to get it, but
well, you know what?
I'll be till May 15th.
Wait, because I ordered us some Our True Crime podcast sweatshirts. And when that comes
in. You got one too?
I didn't get a hoodie. I just got a regular sweatshirt.
Oh, what color did you get?
Black, I think. Or charcoal. Okay. Something like that. And then I will, when that comes in, I'll swing it by and deliver it to your house. Right, I'll put it on the.
Yeah, put it. I was going to say put it down the street with a flare.
Yeah.
A flare gun.
Oh.
And then you let me know. And when I see it, then I'll run down it.
I'm just going to throw it out my window as a drive by. That's what I'm going to do.
That's what I do too. Yep. All right, Jen.
All right. So I just want to say, if you guys get lonely, if you need to talk, if you got questions, whatever, email us. Our email address is ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at ourtruecrimepod. So we're here. If you need us, if you want to chat, we're here. I know it can get really lonely out there, but we're here for you guys. We love you tons.
And also, here's the thing. Camille is up at about 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. Jennifer is the late shift. So I do the early shift. Jen does the late shift.
Yep.
So there you go.
I'm usually 10:30, 11 o'clock. I'm up late. So
remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Does that make sense? Did that all make sense?
Yeah. She died before she was supposed to.
Yeah.
And her balloon was gone. Some bastard stole her balloon.
Exactly.
It's all she has, and some bastard took it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I'm that good. I'm that good.
Mm-hmm. You're good in all things, Jen. You get a gold star and a red star.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
As they're combing through the records, something begins to stick out.
His penis?
Yeah, it was a penis, Jen.
Thanks. Yeah.
I wouldn't know. It's been a long time. Marilyn Chambers. She's the deep throat girl. Sorry, put that at the end, Nico.
If you guys get lonely and you're out there and you need to talk or discuss anything, shoot us an email at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. No, there's no at, is there? No, there is an at. Fuck me. I cannot think about it. Email us at ourtruecrimepodcast. Don't talk.
Podcast.
Don't.
At gmail.com.
Don't talk. We both can't talk. If you are lonely and you need to talk or just need.
Ourtruecrimepodcast. Drop. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Did you hang up on me?
No. I just, because you're being a fucking bitch. I'm going to go play with my kids. They're much nicer than you are. No.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
They aren't. All right.
Remember, lock your doors.
Pass by those open windows and wash your hands and don't talk.
Oh my God.
Eyes.
Stop it. We got to do it again. You ready? Yep. And wash your hands. There you go.
Don't touch your face. Yeah.
And don't touch your face.
Stay safe. We love you.
That's all I do. That's all I do is touch my face now. It's out of control.
I don't. I rub my eyes, and that's the worst. So
same thing. Same thing. Mm-hmm. It's anything. All right. That's it. All right.
All right.
Chat you later.
Bye.
Okay. And stop.